Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. That's in the Black Belt, and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app, and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there also. Full of podcasts with the latest programs on Time for Awakening and always interesting articles that you can download, read, or listen to at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're going to be in part two of our discussion with activist and documentary filmmaker Brother Jason Black is with us for part two of the discussion on his latest project from Black Channel Films, Race War. Myself and Brother Richard went to the screening on Thursday, and it'll be interesting discussion with Brother Jason, being that we've seen the documentary. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. You know, just prepared to kind of continue to develop this discussion around the documentary Race War and see where what new insights we, Brother Jason helped us with in this presentation, which I did enjoy.
You know, before we kind of get into things with the Brother Jason, and do have a couple calls on the line. What I might do, I might grab one caller in the beginning to kind of start things off so they don't hold on a long time, and then we'll kind of get into some things ourselves. But before we do that, I'm going to read the announcement again. Time for Awakening is hosting a panel discussion. Panel discussion in community forum. 50 years of black political representation in Philadelphia. Now is the time for an African-American grassroots or African-centered political agenda. The location is Imhotep Charter High School, 6201 North 21st Street in the West Oak Lane section of Philadelphia. The date is October 27th. The time is 12 noon to 4 p.m. The event is sponsored by Time for an Awakening, the Kuumba Family AILC, and African-Centered Schools Association. The admission is free to the public. For more information, you can look at the Time for Awakening Facebook page, timeforawakening.com, and pull down a copy of the flyer. It's on social media. Panel discussion and community forum at Imhotep Charter High School, 6201 North 21st Street in Philadelphia, October 27th. That's next Saturday, 12 noon to 4 p.m. We'll announce it a couple more times before the program is over this evening. I want to welcome in our guests. We were at the screening on Thursday evening down at the Boris Building down in Center City, Philadelphia, for the documentary Race War. And back for part two of our discussion is Brother Jason Black. Brother Jason, how are you, sir?
Black first, brother. Glad to be back with you.
I'm glad to have you.
Brother Same Jason, here.
Brother Jason, we were down for the screening on Thursday. Very interesting documentary. I mean, listen, I didn't expect it because I saw it 7 a.m. and Gentrified and have copies of them. So, you know, the standard was kind of high. I expected you to keep up your level of expertise, and you didn't disappoint. The way the documentary was put together, the different folks that you had from almost all levels of society, from different professions, even the two white supremacists that you had in the documentary, they all seem to come to the same conclusions, maybe from different perspectives, that black folks are right in the midst of a race war. Before you talk about some of the things in the movie, because I want to point out some things. I know Brother Richard has some things that he wants to throw out. Let me... I'll take this first call because they jumped on basically as soon as we got started with the program, so I don't want them to hold for a long time because I know we got plenty of time to talk to you. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes. Elliot, how are you, sir?
How are you, sir?
Good. Good. Richard, how are you, sir?
Good. How you doing, man?
And Brother Jason Black, thank you, sir, for what you've done. Your expertise, sir, and I want to say to you that I learned something from that documentary that I never thought about. We always think that white folks are more together than what we think they are. Well, I saw from Spencer and an old guard of the white supremacy organization where they were in disagreement. That was one thing you did, but you did one thing that's happening in Philadelphia too, which is gentrification all over the country. And we all are affected by that. And by you putting that in there and taking us from that situation to the two police officers, one male, one female, in the L.A. area, and this the gentleman who's from Colors, and you had Judge Joe, and you put all those people together from diverse backgrounds to give us an idea that what's going on in Philadelphia is going on in Chicago, Atlanta, and... also California. I want to commend you on that, sir. And I also looked at some research on you, some of the things that you did, such as Pig Hunt, Simon Says, and Freaky Fannin. And I also want to see your film on gentrification. Sir, you made me dig more deeper, and I've noticed from doing my research on you that you're saying you're solutionary. You want a solution. You think we should be together, and your solution, part of your ingredient, you talk about economics as us getting out of this situation. And I haven't met you in person one-on-one, but I like your work.
Well, thank you very much. I've done the best that I could as far as trying to be a credit to black society, because in my world, the words black excellence are not jingoistic. They're not a sloganist way of life. I compare my work to everybody else. I don't compare my work to just, you know, black film directors, black documentarians. I take a look at Hollywood. My goal is really to try to, at the very least, meet those standards and exceed them. And I don't just mean in production value. I'm also talking about as far as investigative value. I believe that everyone who saw Race War, and I talked about this long before the film was ever released, I said that you would learn things in Race War that you did not know. You would see things that you have not seen before. There have been several documentaries, or at least there's been two or three, that have interviewed Jerry Taylor and Richard Spencer before. Now, one that was on Netflix. I think it's still on Netflix, as a matter of fact. Here's the issue. If you watch that documentary and then watch mine, you will find out very quickly that one of them woefully underserves you, and the other one dumps a bunch of things on you and a bunch of information you didn't have before. I asked questions of these two that the rest of the media, period, has not asked. I didn't ask pointless questions. I didn't ask them their favorite salad dressing. I didn't ask them, you know, would you ever date a black woman or silliness like that. I asked them questions about themselves and their movement and about other white supremacists. And the real question you have to ask yourself is, why is it that these multi-billion dollar white multinationals did not ask these two the questions that I did? That's the real question you should ask yourself. Why is it that they've interviewed these two over and over again and yet never asked the questions that I did? That's the real thing I've learned.
I'm going to say one more thing. I'm going to let you go because I know the other callers. I'm going to show you, sir, that I'm a graduate, undergraduate at HBCU, and one of the oldest schools in the country, Lincoln University. And it was my idea to put a documentary together because we became 100 years old before our organization, Kappa Alpha Psi. Our actual charter in Oxford, Pennsylvania, Lincoln University. And I tried to get the brothers so hard to get together, let's do this, that's because people need to know about Lincoln University, all we've done, what we contributed to the black community, all the United States. It was so hard. I like what you did. It was so hard getting them to do it. Once I got it off the ground to do it, then they thought they were embarrassed because they were afraid that they see it wasn't professionally done. Had to convince them that they have to believe in themselves. And they're becoming better because we have to fulfill the dream of keeping it together because we one day won't be around. You did something with a documentary that I've never seen before, and I've seen a lot of them. I mean, I'm talking about relating to us in our community that way. That I'm very moved, and I've looked at some of your interviews. You're not in it for the movie part. You're in it to put us on track as to get together to get out of this situation. I don't look at you as an entertainer. I look at you as a brother I look at leadership and putting it together so we can get out of the situation across the country and gentrifications around the world. So we can start here if we have to take it around the world, but with something from here and around the country. Talk to you. That was a great, great film. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Sure.
Brother Jason, we viewed the documentary Thursday. The theater was about three quarters full. I would like to have been jam packed. It's about three quarters full of people. And what I really enjoyed. Now I don't know whether because I know you was at the premiere in New York, but you've been around to your other documentaries that have screened and been in different cities. And I'd like to find out your dynamic because. Usually when it's events here in this particular city, it's a age bracket of people that are generally there. For Race War, I was pleasantly surprised to see a lot of younger people coming in either with maybe chaperones because they look too young to necessarily be their parents, either chaperones and some with their parents, and some look like they were two or three of them just by themselves, I think, Richard.
Couples, it was definitely a diverse age group.
Yeah. And that's what I'm just curious.
And family, I think to emphasize the point about family, believing that, matter of fact, I think I asked one and they said because their parent, brought them.
Okay. Yeah. But Brother Black, do you notice, younger people coming out, maybe in some prior screenings of your movies or even the screening of Race War, what do you notice about the dynamic of the ages?
Well, I've always catered what I do to be an educational effort. And I want it to be something that is mature and to be taken seriously, but at the same time is understandable, comprehensible, and digestible to pretty much any age. I mean, my films have all been calibrated to speak in down-to-earth language. We don't use a bunch of jargon. We don't go off on a bunch of complicated concepts. We just try to distill it down to its essence. And really, for the purposes of being engaging to an adult, but intellectually accessible to a child. So you could put this film in front of a 5-year-old or a 50-year-old. Both of them will be equally engaged, and both of them will be equally informed. And they'll both be able to grasp the concepts and what's being stated to them equally. So a lot of my work is in communication, making sure that this film is able to communicate no matter what your age is. That's a big thing for me, because this is going to outlive all of us. What I've done with my films here long after any of us. And I have to think to myself, you know, we didn't think about this before with films, you know, with Misho and, you know, The Spook Who Sat by the Door and whatnot. We weren't thinking back then, you know, Black folk were so busy surviving that in this media age now, media is eternal. So what you saw as a child, your children and grandchildren now have access to the exact same media as children themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have to think for the generations after us. I can't even put a limit on the number of generations. We have to think about all the generations after us. There's going to be some 10-year-old child, some 10-year-old Black child who had an incident or whatever, wanted to experience, you know, selling Snicker bars or whatever. And they're going to run into racism. And somebody's going to put a copy of 7 a.m. in front of them to explain it to them. Or there's going to be some college student, 18 years old, and can't afford to live anywhere inside the city and is going to be having a rough go of it, and someone's going to give them a copy of Gentrified. And that's this perspective that I made these for, is to be intellectually accessible no matter what your age range is. I want these to be able to last and communicate forever.
You know, the premise of race war, and I'm going to just throw some things in there myself, because any of us that understand our situation here, we've been warred upon since we've been on these shores. And in almost every facet of life, whether you're talking about business and business startups, education, housing across this country, and you pointed it out in your documentary, Gentrified, jobs, it's all been a war strategy by Europeans and the system of white supremacy against Black folks, and the use of media and the police to kind of put an image out there of Black folks by the use of media and the police to keep Black folks in line, so to speak. Talk about it from your perspectives of especially the media, because you talked about that. You spent some time in the documentary talking about media and the use of media to keep a narrative out there of Black people and Black life. Talk about it again from your perspective and dealing with the film.
We use the term media, but that's not really what it is.
Okay.
It's when we say media, what we're really saying is a communication medium. It is our ability to communicate and to talk to others on a mass level. So you have one person who is able to communicate and message a mass of people, as opposed to, you know, sitting in your daily life and you can only talk to one person at a time. Having a healthy media infrastructure is essential. Having the means to be able to do that is essential, because it is what allows you to get everybody equally informed. You don't have to worry about how well informed the population is. When Johannes Gutenberg created the printing press, that was the first mass media, because it allowed a medium through which masses of people could become equally informed, which was revolutionary. And that's what we have today and what we need today. The problem is that all of the so-called media that we as Black people, for the most part, refer to are not Black owned. And the problem, even that wouldn't be, in that in and of itself is not what is nefarious. It certainly puts you at a huge disadvantage because of this next part. Whoever owns the media is usually going to try to craft it for their own personal benefit, or for their own benefit, period. if we don't have a media that serves our interests and everybody else does, then what you're doing is you're going to everybody else who sees informing you and your people as a hobby, as a byline, as a side job that they have, but they don't really see it as their primary objective. So you can go to Telemundo, but Telemundo is going to see about the interests of Latino people first. You can go to CBS and ABC and Fox, they're going to see the interests of white people first. You can go to Al Jazeera, they're going to see the interests of Arabs first. And whatever affects you will be second, third, fourth, or may not even be on the list at all. So having our own media, our own communication medium, so that we can communicate and talk to black people on in mass as a group is absolutely essential, because we turn on the television every night and we hear what these people say every night, and they are beating us to death. They are justifying our murder on a mass level so that the average common citizen doesn't see a problem with it or doesn't see anything objectionable with it. You deserve it on some level, because the media keeps programming people with the idea that you deserve it. And that's why what I'm trying to do, I consider it to be absolutely essential. I try to do a very good job about it, because we as black people have been horrifically disserved by the old black media, the TV ones, the Ebony's, the Jet, the Black Enterprise. They have really done us a horrible disservice, because most of them have at best been incompetent and at worst have been double agents.
Okay.
Ebony Magazine has become a double agent publication. You might as well have, you know, Richard Spencer as the editor-in-chief at Ebony Magazine. He might as well be there. Black Enterprise Magazine, you might as well have Omarosa and Ben Carson as your publisher, because that's essentially where you are. They do not serve, they've got black folks' faces. We have to stop being childlike about this and say, okay, what in our interest is this serving? And these media don't do that anymore. Most of what you call black media, which is the old black media, because we are the black media now, but the old black media is really just a bunch of black folk who had jobs from the legacy media, print magazines, television. I mean, who watches broadcast TV anymore? And yet Roland Martin has made it his life's mission to get another job on broadcast TV. He's been trying to get a name on the internet for over a year. That's failed spectacularly. And he's not interested in black people's interests. You guys saw my movie. Go compare his interview with Richard Spencer to mine. Interview to mine and see which one you came away from feeling like you had been informed. That's what happened to the old black media. We're here to change that. And I didn't complain about it. I didn't whine about it. I didn't try to get Roland Martin to find religion. I said, you know what? I can replace you or supplant you. At the very least, there will at least be a counter message to you. Maybe I can't remove you. Maybe I can't get bigger than you, but you will no longer be the only viable voice in the room. And that's where we are today. And quite frankly, a lot of people from the dead black media, the old black media, are very, very scared, and they should be.
Clean glass, you know, thing, dirty glass.
If I may, on that, because when you talk about especially Ebony and the Business Journal, they have been sold to white companies now, along with Essence and whatever. So, you know, it's besides the sellout, and I trace that back to Johnson and that The Secret of Selling to the Negro, production that he did. As you know, not really catering to business, but it seems like that when they sold these companies, it went even more to having black face on a white propaganda machine, as far as it deals with trying to maintain the market thing. And therefore, it is not about journalism. It is not about information communication. It is definitely more trying just to sell product to black people from white companies. Would you agree or disagree with that thought?
Okay, well, there was nothing nefarious about the how to sell to the Negro thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to drum up business. He was trying to get those white dollars. That's what you're supposed to do. When the Asians open up stores in our neighborhoods, they're competing to get those black dollars. We're supposed to be competing to get dollars from everybody else. That's what we're supposed to do. The difference is that other people see themselves as an ethnic block, and they make no bones about it, whereas black people spend most of their time trying to deny their ethnicity because we see it as a negative. But there's nothing wrong with what John Johnson was doing and how to sell it to the Negro. That was a way to drum up business. That was legitimate. Nothing wrong with that at all. Get General Motors money. Get all the black dollars and then go get the white ones. Go get the Asian. Go get the Arab. Go get the Latino. Go get everybody. Nothing wrong with that. And by letting them know the value of doing business with us, that's competition. And we're supposed to be the best in the world at it. So there was nothing wrong with that. Where it becomes a problem is when you start being dishonest to your black customers. Mm-hmm. When you tell black people that this is a black magazine in black people's interests, and in reality, what you really are trying to do is be an undercover white apparatus or organism for the purposes of fleecing money from black people. Now, that's where it becomes a problem. That's where it becomes nefarious. That's where it becomes scandalous. Because Ebony Magazine used to publish in black people's interests, and now it no longer does. It is an entity now that is, while it's not completely white-owned, it's owned by an equity group, last I heard. The real problem is your old legacy black media is attempting desperately, however they can, to get themselves bought out or acquired by a white corporation. Everybody's auditioning. This is what I was talking about with Roland Martin and the rest of them before. All these people at these old legacy media, black media companies, the Jamila Lemieux and the Jamel Hills and the Roland Martins of the world, all of them are out there trying to get a gig at a white company. And a lot of the people who, the publishers of these old legacy ones, are trying to get a white company like Time Warner to publish, to purchase them. That's what they're really trying to do. They're trying to figure out, how can I get purchased by a white company? How can I rebrand my magazine so that it is enticing and most of all non-threatening to a potential white or Asian buyer? And so you've seen the magazines reformat themselves to promote swirling and interracialism and, of course, black male hatred. Everything's got to be about attacking the black male because we are the preeminent threat as far as everyone else is concerned. So now you see that is the focus. The focus, they brand themselves as black magazines and say that they're focused on black people, but in reality, black people are just a niche. Everybody at these publications and these TV stations and whatnot are really trying to figure out how can they get a gig at a white network or a white magazine. And that's why as soon as one of them gets an opportunity to bolt, they don't even turn out the light behind them. And that's what disserves us horribly about the old black media, which is why I had to step in to replace them.
And we're happy with that.
Go ahead, Richard, because I know you want to throw some things in the mix.
You know, the two things, or the thing that, and I couldn't catch the sister name that was the police officer. I thought her interview was, or her exposing her development was interesting because it seemed to bring up some contradictions. And I wanted to did you get that? And how much more footage or of that interview, you know, over that time did you have in order to cut down to the slices that fit the documentary? And then on the other side, Richard Spencer and is it Jerry Taylor? Their interview, because, you know, it seemed that they were, the underlying thing is about nationalism. But let me deal with that. What was her name? The sergeant from the LA police police?
No, Cheryl.
Cheryl. How did you receive, I mean, her projection as far as in dealing with the LA police department?
It's the same as everybody. I don't load my interviews, I don't ask gotcha questions. I just ask people questions. I give everybody the exact same disclaimer before I interview them that, you know, I don't edit to curve their words or their statements or whatever. And the good thing, I like to think the good thing, the unique thing, the different thing about my documentaries is that you get long form answers. You don't get sound. I don't five word answers. I don't do that. So you don't get sound bites or sound chips. You get whole thoughts. And I allow people to express their entire thought as is formed. And then I allow the audience to make a decision, because where I think that a lot of documentaries in this Black empowerment space have fallen short is that they don't really try to find out various subjects. You know, we don't really want to find out what is it that these people really think, because you might not necessarily agree with them. That happened in Gentrify. That happened in 7 a.m. You know, just because they're Black doesn't mean we're necessarily going to agree with what they're saying, or that you even should. It's up to an individual to make that decision. So I try to present an objective work. I didn't try to put horns on Richard Spencer's head, and I didn't try to make him look like a grinning ghoul or anything like that. I left the sentences intact so you could hear what he had to say. Maybe you'll agree with it. Maybe you won't. It would be a lie to say that there are Black folk who don't agree with him. Individuals should be allowed to make their decisions. Likewise, just because somebody's Black in the film, I don't do propaganda. I don't get a bunch of people who agree with me, and then I sit down and edit it so that you can hear a bunch of people saying to you what I would be saying to you. I can narrate the film for as far as what I want to say. Why do I need to get 7 or 8 other people just to mirror what I think or what I say? I'm trying to show you the society at large. This is what CNN and ABC do for white society. They don't do it for us. So I'm trying to show you objectively, these are people I talk to, and to give you some idea of the thoughts and the sentiments that are out there, and people can make their own decisions about how they feel about it or what they think about it. I'm just here to present to you an honest picture that you can trust.
And the reason why for her, it struck me because, you know, on one hand, she was, you know, recognize, I'm going to call it being defensive of the police department. In relationship, because that's where she was for those 20, she's been there for those 20 years. But then on the other hand, as it unfolds and dealing with, and I like the as you say, the approach, because the questions are follow-up, right? And the follow-up questions, and one thing comes to mind is in relationship to how certain those police officers that get on the force in LA want to go to the most go to a certain district. And she recognized that they were there for, you know, they weren't there. They were there just for the adventure and the abuse. That's the way I interpret it. So it's, on one hand, she was saying, you know, it's kind of like the community itself. But on the other hand, recognizing that, you know, people are coming there and doing things, you know, that instigate a certain type of action from community members in that district. These police officers, and I'm glad, which I didn't know, I mean, we knew about it, but I didn't know that the recruiting process coming, these officers coming from the South. So even the process of how do they get selected becomes interesting. But that's the reason why I've just thought, as you say, in that long and letting her expose, I thought, you know, I'm going to call it contradictory, not because of her personally, but that's an expression within our community in general. On one hand, we want the police to be there, but on the other hand, we complain about the abuse the police provides to us. And
there are no Black who are anti-police, except maybe a very fringe element out there that just, you know, doesn't have any type of humanity and is interested in barbarism. But outside of that very, very small fraction of a percentage of barbaric individuals, people as a group don't object to police. They object to police brutality. They object to the police being used as a oppressive force. And that's just common sense. No one has a problem with police officers, and Black police officers would work if what good does it do to have black police officers if they're only going to act like the white ones? Right. What good does that do you? So that's a very valid question for us to entertain. And that's a very valid question for us to take a look at. And that's why I spoke to two police officers about that in one of the most notorious cities for this kind of thing. So you can get some idea about it and about the way that they think and the way that they feel about it. So, yeah, that's a very valid question. What we can talk about getting black police officers, but what good does it do you if the black ones are simply going to mimic the behavior of the white ones?
You know, and what the brother was showing in that was, you know, making that point that those black police officers that he came through with in the academy were just like the white police officers in relationship to the aggressiveness that they were going to bring to the community itself. I believe that that was, you know, a part of his observation and realization and experience he had. And for you to, you know, identify that. It exposes that point just that you're making is what good is it if they're both going to do the same thing?
Right, because I mean, you're talking about Brian Bentley.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was explaining was that out of a class of 100 police officer recruits, 91% were white. Mm-hmm. And all your black recruits are not going to make it. All the white ones won't either. But the point is, the overwhelming majority of you'll be one out of that whole class. If 50% of you make it, then you're going to have, you know, 45 white police officers and 4 black ones. That's ultimately what you'll end up with out of that graduating class. And when you make it to the street, what that means is that you are going to be outrageously outnumbered.
Mm.
All the people who are going to enforce the police culture, those will not, it's not going to be an even playing field. You're going to be outrageously outnumbered. So in the practices of policing, you are going to be statistically insignificant in the practices of policing. And that's the point that Brian was trying to make. So we can put black police officers out there, but if all the lieutenants and all the captains and all the sergeants, or most of the sergeants are white, all the people who really have the keys of power, the commissioner and whatnot, if those are all white and you only got 4 or 5 black police officers, that what good does it do to have black people on the police force if they are A, statistically insignificant, and B, being statistically insignificant leads them to just go along to get along ultimately. That's the issue that you face. You can have more on the police force, but you're so grossly outnumbered and politically overpowered that their presence is really a non-issue, which is why they don't have a problem hiring black police officers, because there's enough of a white supremacist apparatus in place already to override any quote-unquote good you could do.
And that white supremacy, and that gets to the Spencer and Taylor side, but that really struck me that is this because the HR department, and I'm speaking to the system of white supremacy and white nationalism, is it that the HR department and the policy decided that they wanted to recruit white males from the South in order?
No. First of all, when you're dealing with corporations, most of your corporations, the HR person is black, usually a black female. That's a token position that they hand out. As far as city governments are concerned, you know, that's going to be handled by the department itself. So the police department has its own procedures for how it hires people. In the film, Judge Joe Brown had pointed this out, and this has been pointed out in other films before also, like Bastards of the Party. If y'all want to go see that documentary as well, that's a good one also that talks about the hiring practices of the LAPD.
Okay.
But especially in the 50s and 60s. But yes, there was a big effort by the Los Angeles Police Department, because remember, if I can very briefly go into this.
Go ahead.
Without being too wonky or esoteric about this. For those of you who do not know, the reason that Federal Express has their main hub in Memphis, Tennessee, is because that is what is considered to be what is called the population median of America.
In other words, if you took every American citizen and made them stand side by side in a line, the person in the middle would be in Memphis, Tennessee. In other words, approximately half of the American population is east of Memphis, Tennessee, and the other half is west of it. Well, as you know, Tennessee is way on the East Coast. What I'm trying to say to you is that a lot of this country is really unsettled or is unpopulated or not nearly as populated as the East Coast is, California being the furthest one out. Now, it's a coastal city, and because of the mob and the movie industry and being a coastal city and the fact it doesn't rain very much out there, it's very inviting to a lot of people, but it had to. It didn't have a population base nearly this large. Like in the 1970s, I was watching video in the 1960s, 1970s, the freeways in Los Angeles looked like Shreveport, Louisiana. I mean, I was like, wow, that must have been a great place to live back then. Today, it's so outrageously overcrowded that I cringe at going out there now. But that's the kind of situation you're talking about. So when those men were at the LAPD, and when they were making those hiring decisions, Los Angeles was not the size it is today. But, and that led to a situation where they had to make different types of hiring decisions. It gave them latitude to make different types of hiring decisions. So then they started recruiting from other places because they wanted a specific type of police department. The police chiefs who came in there wanted to make it clear, we're looking for a specific type of police officer, a specific type of person. And we understand that by the time you get to the 60s, you can't say nigger anymore. So they understood you can't do that. We want to preserve California and Los Angeles for white people, but we can't say no niggers allowed. So we need to hire people who they understand. They're already very agreeable to the type of environment that we want. We don't have to say it to them. Nobody's got to have a confession. Everybody is on code, and we need to hire police officers that are on code. And if 95% of your police department is on code for white supremacy, it doesn't matter what the other 5% makeup is, especially the other 5% is not even on code. They're just out for themselves, every man for himself. So, of course, it gets very easy to enforce an agenda under those circumstances. Very easy. And that's exactly what happened. And by the way, Los Angeles.
And it becomes important.
Los Angeles is the only one that did that. Las Vegas. We talk about Los Angeles, Vegas, and other places have done that. So Los Angeles is far from the only one that executed that type of those types of practices of hiring from the South or trying to get people from the South or making it agreeable to the South. They're just one among many. Sundown towns are not simply a Southern phenomenon. Far from it.
And that's why what comes out of even in this discussion for me and I hope for the listening audience, and Brother Jason, is the point that when we talk about a civilian review board as far as the police department, that aspect of it, we have to be very clear of the and strategy. That's what I took away from what you just said, because then that determines the type of police officers they are putting in our community. And that should be something that we're aware of more than something we are feeling the effects of, just as a means of being able to be on top of all.
Well, think about this for a moment. Think about this. Go back and take a look at the video. You can look it up on YouTube. Take a look at the video of O.J. Simpson's parole hearing. Go take a look at that parole hearing. Do you realize it was all white? O.J. Simpson's parole hearing was overseen by all white people. And this brings up a point that I've made for years. Do you, and I told this to Jared Taylor when I told him here, I said, no, that he was trying to, of course, deny that there was the justice system was rigged or whatever. I said, you realize that every single major city in America and every single state, as a black male, if I'm accused of a crime, I could be arrested and tried and convicted and never, from the moment of my arrest, never encounter anything but white people. From the time I'd be arrested, it would be nothing but white people around me. As a white man, you could never say that. That you could get arrested and there were nothing but black people from the time you, from the officers who arrested you to the booking officers, to the jailers, to the bailiff, to the judge, to the stenographer. You could never say that there were nothing but black people. You can never be ferried through the justice system, the court system, rather, because it's not a justice system, for God's sake. But you can never say as a white person that you can never imagine a place where you could be ferried through the court system and never meet anything but black, non-white people. But as a black person, from the parole boards to, you know, your civil service boards and whatever, you'll meet, there'll be nothing but white people. And those are the things that they put in place to make sure it doesn't matter how many black police officers you have. If the civil review board is stocked by white supremacists and you don't get to vote for those, now you can vote for your city council. You don't get to vote for the civil review board people. Those are, they made sure those are appointed. That's not up for public review. And then the police chief and the city council get to say, oh, well, we want them fired, but that darn pesky civil review board, let them back on. Now, of course, if you're a white, if you're a black police officer, you never make it that far. Amazingly enough, if you're black, you never get that far. That civil review board is never sitting there defending you, especially if you harm a white person. All of a sudden, that civil review board that's just always pro-police, all of a sudden, they're anti-police. If the police officer is a black police officer who's harmed a white person, all of a sudden, the Civil Review Board is on the side of civilians and not the police. Kind of interesting how that works.
Yeah. Mm. Listen, that that Minnesota police officer that shot that white woman, he'll be finding that out very shortly.
Muhammad Nawar.
Yes.
And yes, it's going to be a situation where, like I say, they haven't... they're still deciding whether or not they're going to try to put him on trial. Now, in the same state, Geronimo Yanez, who killed Philando Castile, oh, well, nothing we can do about it. Case closed.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't take them any time to get to that. Black man shoots a white woman under completely justifiable circumstances, and you saw Geronimo Yanez do it on video under completely unjustifiable circumstances, and they very quickly made it clear, yeah, nothing we can do about that. Let's move on. But when you're black, all of a sudden, the court system all of a sudden doesn't like police anymore. And your police unions are not standing up for police officers anymore. All of a sudden, the entire police apparatus becomes anti-police. From the police chief won't stick up for his own officer, the police union will not speak out for one of their own members, the Civil Review Board is not coming to his defense. Amazing how everything turns a 180 when we're the ones who do it, when we try to do it. Very same thing you just saw them do to us. When we try to do it, all of a sudden the system moves very fast against us.
We're going to take a brief break. We're at the top of the hour. You can get involved in the conversation by calling 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with activist and documentary filmmaker Brother Jason Black. He's with us for part two of our discussion. They had the screening here for Race War on Thursday here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're kind of talking about some of the things in the movie and other related topics. You can join the conversation again by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society. Only at that juncture in human society, where it is split between those who have and those who ain't got.
I throw a Molotov cocktail at the precinct. You know how we think. Organize the hood under our chain banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the streetlight watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organizing wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common need. And all my comrades is ready, we just spreading the seed.
The black man, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a
no more. more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We tired of that. Corporations hiring blacks, denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my raps. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathe in it. It's more than just fucking believe in it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's C-Lo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
The average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Tonight, our special guest for part two of the discussion is activist and documentary filmmaker, Brother Jason Black is with us. His latest project for Black Channel Films, Race War, was screened here in Philadelphia on Thursday. And we're in conversation tonight with the producer of the documentary film. You can join the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Caller here, let's go back to fact a couple calls. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to 267. 267?
Hello?
267? Yes.
Yes, it's 267?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Brooker, this is Joseph Harrison. How are you?
How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. Yeah, I listened to the film, and I listened to you guys, and I looked at the trailer. Yeah, it just seems like... And I want to applaud you for documenting this type of information. And I remember being lectured with Dr. Robinson years past at the Dessert Club, and he talked about how there's the need for using the arts and the media, filmmakers, to really get the message out. And there's some great films coming out, and this is another great film that we need to that everybody needs to see. So the folks, so the masses can have an idea of you know, the reality that that we're living in. I don't think it's anything isolated to L.A. or say Vegas or Alabama. I personally think this is the nature of the beast that we've been living in for 4,000 years or 400 years, whatever you want to call it. So I think it's less we have to, as a people, kind of understand that we're living in a bad neighborhood, and we have to just maybe think about ways that we can start to stop this from happening, or trying to combat it another way. I have an idea what the answer is, but I think we have to just deal with the reality of our current situation. I don't think it's isolated to L.A. I mean, Philly, New York. I mean, folks are getting killed around the world, around the country. You know what I mean?
No, it's not a problem that's relegated to specific cities. It's nationwide. It's a culture, and
yes,
the only one that's going to stop it is us. We have to come up with strategies to fight, because this is a war. Some of our people don't realize it, but we've been warred upon. We haven't developed strategies to counteract some of these skirmishes and battles that we're facing. But we have to.
I agree. That's exactly right. So until we stop, we need to stop being afraid, and know that, you know, God has empowered us to do great things too. We can't just walk around afraid forever. And I'm training our men and our boys and to a level of consciousness to see, you know, so this is what we need to do as men, you know. So I think that's at least the respect, because there's no respect there. And it's for good reason, because we're not doing anything about it. No respect. So when you know what you're dealing with on a, you know, with their individuals, and you know, and sure, I mean, it's going to work. I go to work, so you know what they, what you're dealing with. Real, no respect there, and there's no reason to respect you because no, these people won't see the humanity in you. Because there's nothing that you, that we as a people do that to stand up and make a change. Like Amos Wilson, the famous speech is, so what are you going to do about it? Yeah, we know it's happening. What are you going to do about it? That's, you know, well, so like but, in the, back in the day on the street, what you going to do? Okay. You know, so that's basically
Thank you for your comments, brother.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about Tuskegee Breakfast now, which is not a good time.
Well, I'll put you on hold and get right back to you.
All right, no problem. Thank you, Booker.
Right. Let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
Fine. Hey, Brother Richard, how you doing, my brother?
All right, now.
So Elliot, you going to go back to Brother Black in a little bit?
Yeah, Brother Black is on with us now.
Oh, cool, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I just wanted, you know, a couple of things I wanted to say. First to Brother Black, I'm proud of you, brother. The documentary that you did, brother, it was outstanding. I went to see it this past Thursday, brother, and you didn't miss a beat.
You're
welcome, my brother. You did not miss a beat, and it was in your face, and you covered all the bases and stuff. You know what I mean? But like you said, to Brother Elliot and Brother Richard 3 minutes ago, Brother Black, you know, like you said, the police apparatus, they always do that. They always see, especially black police officers, some of them, they too cowardly or too ignorant to see how the game is played, how they being played, you know what I mean, right, and stuff. Like, as long as black people being killed by white officers, the police unions, all of them, they jump up all the time to support them and stuff, no matter what they do. When black officers or Latino officers or Asian or white officers kill black, but as soon as a person of color, especially a black person, kill a white person or abuse them, then all of a sudden these police unions, the police apparatus, all of a sudden they don't show that same kind of support. I mean, and you would think by now some of these black officers would realize that by now. Right here in Philadelphia, Brother Black, you got to...
They do realize that is the issue, though. Let's just be very clear about this. They do realize that. And the first thing they're going to ask themselves objectively is, does the black community have their back on something?
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, we as black people have demonstrated that we don't really have anybody's back. If they go to bat, other than coming for voting for Bill or Hillary Clinton or some other ineffectual politician, that's really what we do. But in our cities and whatnot, we don't take command of our street. We don't take command of our block. We don't take command of our neighborhood. And because of that lack of doing that, they have to ask themselves objectively, if they're Asian or white, they know who's going to come to their defense if they do something.
Oh, no question.
As black police officers, where's the black society to come to their defense? The other issue is, where is the black agenda? Mm-hmm. You have white police officers who are enforcing white supremacy. Why? Because white society has an agenda. You have Latino police officers that enforce Latino supremacy. They have an agenda. Black police officers are looking for a job. That's the agenda. Because black society itself does not actually have an agenda. Now, if we did, then you would have police officers with a purpose. As it stands, you don't. So these things don't work for us because our police officers don't actually have a purpose for joining the force other than to get a job. What you heard from Brian Bentley in the film was that white police officers join the police force, but they've got much more than policing on their mind.
Yes.
No question, no doubt. And see, that's why I say, brother, but I think it's a twofold thing. I think it's black police officers are responsible, as well as the black community, for, like you said, for not having an agenda, as well as black politicians. If we had black politicians that was pushing the agenda. I mean, they're in more of a position to push it than the average black, you know, lay person and stuff. So the average black person that go to work.
Okay, now let me interject there. The entire purpose of electing someone to office, an agenda, some side part of their job. They are put in office to promote your agenda. That's the entire purpose of having
office.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And yet, Black people are the only group of people who will tell somebody that a black politician should not have a black agenda.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You heard that with Obama. You heard black people, even to this day, some of these ignorant Negroes, you heard that to this day. They say, well, you can't expect Obama to be president for just for black people. I mean, we're the only ones say that. So we said it we had the first black mayor in this town with Wilson Good, and you seen what happened with the city of Philadelphia. We're the only people that I never heard my Latino brethren, my Asian brethren, when they get elected politicians up there here, they never sit there and say, well, we don't expect them to do for our community. They want them. They expect them to do, but we're the only ones that say that dumb stuff, and this is why we get what we get, brother. There's no getting around that. That's why we continue to get what we get, you know?
Imagine a gay politician with gays saying that we don't expect him to do anything for the gay community.
Exactly. Exactly.
It wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't happen, brother Black. And like I said, until we change our mindset, we're going to continue to keep getting what we're getting and stuff. And as long as we keep on with that mindset, whether we get a black president, a black governor, a black mayor, black congressman, black senator, we're going to continue to get what we get. Our schools are going to continue to be held.
Not continue to get what you are currently getting. No, you will not continue to get that. If black people do not change what they're doing, they will end up like they are in California and Colorado and increasingly in New York City. You will no longer get the mistreatment because you will no longer be there.
Well, you're right. I agree with you on that. You're right. You know, right. Well, that was my next thing. I was going to say, we won't even be here. We keep with that mindset. We won't be in existence no more. I agree with that as well. We're going to be moved out of these cities everywhere. That's a given. I don't disagree with that at all. I've been saying that. You know,
some of us killed will be moved out of cities.
Yes.
Some of us don't.
No, you're right. I mean, like I said, our mindset has to change. But if our mindset don't change, then, you know, you pretty know what the score is. If our mindset don't change, again, you know, we fighting a losing battle. You know what I mean? Like I said, the definition of insanity, and I close with this, brother, and I say it all the time, Brother Black, the definition of insanity is to keep hitting your head against the wall and your blood come out, you expect a different result. That's the definition. And we as a people, we keep putting these same elected officials in office on the federal, city, or state federal level, and we expect different results by voting for them same kind of politicians and not holding them accountable. We wonder why our people stay in the condition we stay in. It's not rocket science. It's pretty clear cut to me.
The politicians elect the electorate.
Thank you for your call, brother.
You're welcome, my brother. Mm-hmm.
The reason that we have white supremacist politicians and the white supremacist as president is because he reflects the electorate. That is what the electorate thinks. And the black politicians that we have, guess what? Those reflect the electorate.
I have to raise this point because, you know, Elliot, you raise it all the time, and I wanted to raise it with Brother Black based off of what we mentioned earlier around just the whole communication apparatus, black and white. Do you think, and because of work that, like, race war that you're doing and other works you have done, that this information will change the notion of the black electorate being more informed to be more responsible in creating an agenda? Is it because of the lack of information, or is it because of certain mindset? And we have this discussion here, so it's good that you bring this up.
Yeah, it's already changing. Hillary Clinton didn't get elected because black people's needle has started to move. That was the reason she didn't get elected. There were enough black people who actually asked, wait a minute, we're not sitting here asking Dumbo Sambo questions. We're not here to get a photo op with you. What are you going to do about this prison industrial complex that you and your husband constructed? Her answers were not good enough, and black folks stayed home. I did a whole broadcast analyzing in the state of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was one of the states where black folks stayed home.
They mm-hmm.
You can take a look at the numbers. They showed up for Obama. They did not show up for Hillary Clinton. Michigan, another state where they showed up for Obama, did not show up for Hillary Clinton. Not a huge, large number, but just enough to keep you from getting what you wanted. So I submit to you that the 10 years of work I've been doing, and of course, Dr. John Henry Clark before me and all the others, it's bearing fruit now. The old civil rights generation that doesn't really have any standards and they really just want a peaceful death. The young folk today are not interested in acquiring a peaceful death. They want freedom, justice, equality. They want power, wealth, influence. And they are not going to sit here and vote for whoever white mommy or white daddy puts in front of them. Young people have an agenda. Now, that agenda needs to be focused. And we need to properly educate them about how to get an agenda that's in their interest. But the young people are the ones out in the streets with Black Lives Matter, even though I don't support the leadership of it. It's the young people who are out in the streets protesting the police brutality, not the old folks, not the middle-aged people like that. The young folk are, because the young people understand that they're the primary targets. And they didn't go looking for the clergy to come speak up for them either. The clergy tried to show up in Ferguson, and the young folk chased them off. The clergy tried to show up in Baltimore. The young folk chased them off. And so the oppressive white supremacist apparatus, realizing that the young people are not looking to the white stooges in the clergy anymore for an agenda, they don't know what the hell to do with you now except start shooting. Because they don't have any puppets to mislead you anymore. So where the Black Channel comes in, I tell you, these things move at a glacial pace. We didn't get into this in a year. We're not going to get out of it in a year. But the needle is already moving. You're hearing people say things they weren't saying before. Yeah, you still got a buck-dancing contingent in Black society that's just going to vote for whoever white mommy puts in front of them, no matter who it is or what they say or what they don't do. I mean, you're always going to have your slave-minded, plantation-minded Black folk who just do not think. You're always going to have that. The real issue is, can we galvanize enough Black people who can be bothered to think and do have an agenda in Black people's interests? And I'm telling you that it's already begun happening. Conversations that we're having now, these conversations weren't occurring 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago. These conversations on this broadcast weren't even happening. They weren't even, it wasn't even a discussion. You voted for Obama and that was it. Now people are questioning why they did it. They're questioning what they get out of it. And we've reached that critical 10% tipping point. All you have to do is convince 10% of people in society. There's multiple studies that have proven this, that if you can convince, the tipping point for societal change is 10%. If you can convince 10% of a society to adopt a behavior, it's practically guaranteed that the other 90% are going to either adopt it completely or at least accommodate it. And that's where we're at now. Black empowerment is no longer a niche issue. And asking Black politicians, what are you going to do for Black people? That's no longer a niche question. We're not going to have this cowardice where, well, we're going to vote for the Black politician, but we need the white folks to support them, so we can't ask for nothing for Black folk because the white folks won't vote for them if we do that. Those scared and cowardly Negroes have lost sway. No longer have the pull that they once did. Now what you have is a shell game going on where the white media apparatus tries to tell you that they're the only game in town and this really still is the issue with the old Black politicians like that.
Yep.
But something, it's like with race war, they did what they always try to do, though this time it failed and blew up in their faces. In New York City, race war was sold out. In New York City, you had TMZ do a piece about us. You had Vice TV running around behind us. If TMZ knows, CNN knows, and I'm telling you they do know because I bought footage from CNN. So CNN absolutely knows about race war. I bought footage from them. They absolutely know about race war. Their job is to pretend that they don't know. That's their job. They're all just because they don't know what to do. You know, they acknowledge you when they have an answer for you. When they know how to discredit you or they know how to shut you down, they just come out with their answers. They don't hide from you. They hide from you when they realize you're formidable and they don't actually have answers for what you're going to put on them. They're hiding from us. I'm buying billboards on major thoroughfares, and they're hiding. They're hiding because they realize things are changing, and they don't really have an answer for this, because the only answer they could give is to say, well, why do you need Black empowerment? And that's a loser coming out of the gate. If you even ask that question, you've already lost. So even Jared Taylor and Richard Spencer were not silly enough to ask that.
Yeah, let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, brother Black. I haven't seen the movie as yet. But, you know, Brother Black, if you could come to Memphis, you could bring that movie to Memphis, man. That would be great. Because it's much needed down here in the South. You know, it's a lot of homicide going on. And a movie like this would kind of, you know, politicize the youth at least, you know, because nothing like this is taking place down here in these parts of the country.
Well, we need black folk to show up for race war like they did for Black Panther in those comic book movies, because a bunch of black got school buses together filled with black children talking about it was a positive black image to see a comic book character. They did not insist on bringing their children to see race war in similar numbers. So if black people are not serious about it in these cities, then maybe extinction and removal is in order. But don't expect anybody else to make a film and that's going to change the world. The people will change the world, or they will decide to exit it. But black people as a group need to make a decision that they are ready to entertain serious discussions about serious things. Because if you're showing up for Black Panther, a fictional character, and you don't consider it to be a priority to have your children can meet a real life race warrior as a police officer, race soldiers, you don't consider that to be more important, then there's no film in the world that's going to fix that.
That's true, you know. And, you know, and another thing too, you know, what I think too is, you know, cities like Memphis, Jackson, Tennessee, those cities, you know, blacks in the north who thinking about retiring, I think they should think about, you know, relocating to these cities, because they would have more disposable income, you know. It's a farm, you know, people in Skid Row, they say most of the black people in California living on Skid Row. Now they getting in California. They probably could live a better life if they move, you know. So I think we have to move to demographics, you know, we should move to other people, you know. We can't just sit down and, you know, because we see the demographic changes. And you know what I wanted to ask you, brother, what you think about what's happening in South America with the people in Mexico and Guatemala and that caravan of people that's moving north, and how will that affect us here now with our situation here in the U.S.? And I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call, sir.
I don't think anything about that migrant caravan that has made it up to Mexico at this point. We as black people need to be focused on black issues. We are powerless to stop that thing. We don't even have our act together enough to be able to even respond to it. So I don't have a response to it. We don't even have our act well enough together to even have a response. Forget what the response would be. All we can do is just lie down and accept it.
Let's go to 404, a question or comment for our guest. 404. Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away briefly. You know what? We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, other folks can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with activist and documentary filmmaker Jason Black. Part two of our discussion, we're discussing his latest project on Black Channel Films, Race War. And you can join the conversation again by dialing 215-490-9832. We do have a couple calls on hold, and we'll get to them right after the break. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Now you preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wineskin, or your day of leading our people is over and it will never come back to you again. Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and they're all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
Down so you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in conversation this evening with activist documentary filmmaker Jason Black. We're in part two of our discussion that continued from last week after we viewed the documentary, A Race War, that was that premiered in Philadelphia on Thursday. And we're talking about Brother Black's latest project for Black Channel Films, Race War. You can get involved in the conversation in the last 20 minutes of the program. We'll be ending a little bit early tonight by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got three callers on the line and one international caller, so we'll go to him right now. Let's go to 876. Caller, are you there?
Listen, I'm here, my brother.
How are you, sir?
Well, as I always say, in the presence of the supreme creator of the universe, heaven and earth, the moon, the star that created the first man, the first woman, an African, the mother of the first nations that came out of creation. Then we had 10,000 years ago. We had the enslavement first from the Arabians that came and tore the eastern region of Africa apart. They completely castrated the male of the African and took our women. And many of our women created new strain of the new humanity, the new strains that came in. Then we had the Europeans that came in the last so-called 600 years. And we had the same thing that happened. We had our woman again that were made to be mothers of the European children. That means that the black man is not the father of many of the strain, but the African are the foundation of humanity. And that is the position that we're now speaking from, because we must understand, as a black man, the black man doesn't have a problem. The black man only has solution, because he's the first created being that the Almighty created and endowed with knowledge, wisdom, understanding of spirituality. And as we know, my beloved African brothers, Ethiopia has always been the fountainhead of civilization, the fountainhead of knowledge, the fountainhead of spirituality, and the fountainhead of Christianity. And Ethiopia has been there. Many civilizations rose and many civilizations has fallen. But right at the 21st century, at the dawn of it, Ethiopia is still here with me. So I am Raso Shing, my beloved brother, calling from Jamaica. I'm an Ethiopian, not just by calling name, but by my own baptism as an Ethiopian. So we are the one that is the head of the body of Africa. And as you know, knowledge came down the Nile. It didn't go up the Nile. So the rest is history.
Brother, do me a favor. Do me a favor. I'd love for you to call back. We're trying to get some questions for Brother Jason Black. But I'd love for you to call again, because I'd like to talk about some of the things that you're mentioning on air this evening.
We must, because it's most important that the black man realize that we do not have problems. Those who belong to the slave masters who wants to be with him, they are the ones who created problems, my beloved one. That is a reality.
Thank you for your call, and I want you to call again.
I would definitely love to, because your station is quite interesting. And it's time for us to address the African-American who are still African.
Thank you for your contribution, brother. I'll be looking for your call.
And always remember this. What is confronted in Europe by the black man in European, in London, all over, is the same injustices that is confronted all over America, Canada, where is the black man. So we have that in common, my brother.
All right. Peace now. Perfect. Talk to love. You soon.
Perfect love.
Let's go to 610.
Hey,
Brother Elliot. Good evening. This is Pastor Keith from Church at Overcomer, and good evening, Brother Black.
No worries, sir.
I'm doing great. I hope you guys are well. I was there Thursday as well with a colleague of mine, and we thoroughly were enlightened and enjoyed the presentation, Brother Black. And I just wanted to give a brief commentary. I was very intrigued by the police officers, the sergeant and the other officer. And I think that as a former officer myself, one of the things we don't understand is that there's a culture, as we've been saying, it's a culture of bottom feeders. As we say, they have an agenda. Most police officers are not the best or the brightest in school. They're not necessarily college bound. I was kind of an exception. I had been in college and been officer in the military, and then I went into police work. But the people I work with, the white guys I work with, were very, they weren't the brightest bulb in the bunch. And that's, you know, they recruit those type of people because they will carry out the agenda. And I kind of got that revelation a long time ago, back in the late 80s, and I left police work in 1990 to do what I've been doing since. But the movie itself was just a tour de force, Brother Black. I really enjoyed it. Can't wait for the DVDs to come out. And I'm going to have some, you know, discussion groups about it. I've been talking about it at the church. I've been talking about it to others, that we need to really get on board with creating our own agenda and standing up and confronting the things that are against us.
Brother Black?
I didn't see how to follow up on that. Just say thank you.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed, Brother Black, the way you did juxtapose the two white supremacists. And I think that
it's
really important for us to understand that these people are so diabolical, they can't even agree with each other. So
Untrue. Big misunderstanding where that is concerned.
Okay.
That's the part of the film that everybody talks about the most. And it was a critical part for me. I really consider that to be a crown jewel of it.
It was.
And that's the part people talk about the most. But there's a critical misunderstanding where that's concerned. Yes, I brought you something that you've never seen before, which is I put the light of day on the fact that there is a schism for a number of different reasons between these white supremacist factions. There's always been schisms between white supremacist factions. And of course, when your ideology is based on hate, of course, even if you can knock off all the black folk, the only thing that holds you all together is the concept of hatred. So if black people disappear tomorrow, you have nothing to hold you together unless you start finding somebody new to hate.
Exactly.
Because your being is built upon the purpose of hating something. So of course, they usually start fighting amongst themselves. But that is not the main point. The main point is, what is it that they supposedly disagree about? And what they supposedly disagree over is the best method through which to maintain white supremacy. Richard Spencer is not arguing with Jared Taylor about there shouldn't be white supremacy. Jared Taylor's not arguing. His difference with Richard Spencer isn't that there shouldn't be white supremacy and that we're wrong. They're arguing over what is the best method to achieve it. So the so-called schism, yes, is a schism over what is the best method to achieve white supremacy. Now, while it may have been communicated to people that, by the way, there's a conflict going on amongst themselves, yes, that is true. And that type of thing can actually prove to be destructive, but really only destructive in the short term, because that's what all cleansings do. Cleansings are where you find out who is the strongest, and that ideology is what will prevail. And then they will move forward. Right now, they're just determining which ideology is the one they will move forward with. But let's be very clear. The argument isn't about whether there should be white supremacy or not. They're not arguing over whether they should be white supremacists. They're arguing over which white supremacist doctrine should be the one they go forward with. So it doesn't matter whether Richard Spencer wins or Jared Taylor wins or David Duke wins. No matter which white supremacist wins, we all fail. We all lose.
You know, if I may, I wanted to raise a question that comes out of that. Because in the present climate, doesn't the question of whether America is a white nation, I mean, in its from its before America was America, when it was a British colony, you know, going back to when they really started to classify the distinction of white person, and then going into 1790 with that Naturalization Act, and now listening to, you know, 45, you know, go into his, regardless of these Spencer and Taylor, for us, should we be raising the question, getting clarity of on our own, of whether this is, you know, considered by law and custom a white nation?
Well, I mean, I'm not really sure about the basis of the question, but I mean, undoubtedly, this is a white nation.
Mm-hmm.
Population numbers are really irrelevant in a lot of means. And Richard Spencer touched on this in the film, which is why I've been telling black people for years, the white media has never touched this subject. It took me to talk to them about it, to touch it, where he just said that, you know, even if we are a minority population wise, just because we have that doesn't mean we can't still control the board. In other words, he's talking about South Africa. I would answer your question like this. You and your wife are two people. It's your household. If you and your wife had 12 children or 20 children, there's only two of you and 20 of them. You're 10% of the population of your household. Is it now your children's household, or is it still yours?
That metaphor really speaks to the question.
I'm asking. You all tell me. If you got 20 children, is that your household, or is it your children's household?
Oh, it's still my household.
Thank you. So what you're saying is, it doesn't matter if there's 100 children. I'm the boss.
Mm-hmm.
My household. Well, whether or not this is a white nation, it doesn't matter if they're only 5% of the population. If they control the power, wealth, and influence, and the court system, and the media, then it's their house.
And the point that I was raising, that in law, in the origin of this nation, they defined it. So even though you have these individual personalities, it's in the law that this is a white nation by its own. That's
I think we, especially like the original Constitution, that's very good for an esoteric exercise. I don't really get bogged down that very much, because what you said before was correct. It's the practices. Let us be very, 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 very clear about something. Did I use the word very? Richard Spencer made it crystal clear what his basis for everything was. I'm not interested in fairness. I'm interested in how. From there, it doesn't matter what history says. It doesn't matter what happened in history. Richard Spencer showed you in my film, you've got a disregard for the events of history. If you have the power, you can dictate the current events. Doesn't matter if you're morally right. Doesn't matter if you're historically accurate. If you've got power, you make the rules today. Doesn't matter if the Constitution was written saying that black people are full citizens and whites are one-third of a person. The whites got the power now, so they get to write they get to make up the rules as they go along today. So what was written down, whatever was intended a couple hundred years ago, that's not nearly as important as what they're doing today to maintain it and hold it. I did this film because what they're talking about is, how do we maintain a permanent white majority in a nation where we're going to be a numerical minority? At that point, you know, oh, there's nothing binding on us. Not the old rules, not the old laws. We're making all this up as we go along. And at the end of the day, no matter what question you ask us, the answer is always going to be white supremacy. This isn't about fairness or accuracy or history. This is about our power to inflict and impose our will, regardless of history, mathematics, physics, or anything else. Do we have the power to impose our will? Yes, then impose it.
Caller, thank you for your contribution.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
All right. Bye-bye. Peace. Let's go to 646.
And you know, there should be no problem whatsoever with that, as far as white people having control in this country if they pay the price to be the boss. You know, one of our issues need to be, how do we figure out how we going to take power from them? Because ain't nobody going to give you power.
You have to have an agenda in order to do that, and you're absolutely correct. Power is not given. Power is taken. Dr. John Henry Clark said that they have never properly educated black people, because when you become properly educated, you will take a look at how they achieve power, and then you will realize that when you're properly educated, you do not ask for power. Properly educated people take power.
They assume power.
So we as black people, the reason that we have no power is we have not taken it. But take a look at what happens when the police shoot black folk. We come up talking about forgive, forgive, mm-hmm. and all the bug dancing talk that we do. So power is wasted. Power is wasted on black people. We can talk about power as an intellectual exercise, but the truth of the matter is, in our current state, power is wasted on us. You could give it to us, but it's a complete waste, because not because we simply don't know what to do with it, but we right now don't even have the will to use it.
Because we got an agenda, and that agenda is to be under the tit of the Yoruba, as one would say, to suck its tit. You know, it's like, I will disagree with you about one thing you said this evening. You were talking about, you know, no neck Roley Martin. Now, I'm going to give him credit for this. He's been involved in black media for a long period of time. You know, he's a master buck dancer. He does his thing. But I will say this about him. He is trying to create a media outlet to where as black people are responsible for its survival. And I'm going to give him credit for that. Because I disagree with you in the sense that I believe another network would have probably hired him because of, you know... Yeah.
Do that. He's been on CNN, he's been on MSNBC, every other network fully knows who he is. They had him on there as a guest. If he was really that valuable, he never would have been booted off of CNN if he were that valuable.
I think this contract came up on CNN, and they didn't want to do certain things with him. Hold on one second, brother. Remember the incident that he had when he made the comment about the gay mafia member. They didn't get rid of him then. They may have suspended him for a short period of time, but he was able to stay on that platform for 2 years after that incident. But the point of the matter is that you have to be able at some point in time create your own institutions. And what he's trying to do is create an institution that's putting forward your information. Because I will say this. The one thing that I will give him credit is he speaks about things that other people in black media really doesn't talk about that's in mass media, different from Elliot and some others do. There's not too many cats that do it, bro. Can you name me those that do it?
Sir, Roland Martin is not challenging white supremacy. Roland Martin was literally buck dancing with Hillary Clinton. Roland Martin, that's inventing a Roland Martin that does not exist. There is no black nationalist, black empowerment, black-minded Roland Martin. He sat there in front of Richard Spencer, and literally when Richard Spencer asked him, "Are you a black man?" his exact words, and I quote, "I'm a Christian, I'm a man." He refused to even identify himself as black, so let's not do this slide of...
No, brother, you're missing my point.
I got you.
Brother Black, you're missing my point. My point is this, and let me be clear so you'll understand it.
I got your point.
There is nobody doing any type of Pan-African national type media and mass communications.
Yeah, but he's not. But he's not, Jay.
We're clear about that. But it is information that you have to give the man credit that he's talking about that other mass media isn't talking about.
Not talking
Sarah
about
Bland
he's not.
And some of the other things. They're not talking about it, brother Black.
But he's not either. So you're making that
he
up.
Is. He is. Who's talking about, who's really talking about what's going on with this whole voting thing?
He's not. He isn't. So you can talk about other folks. He's not. Roland Martin's not doing it. I don't know who is, but I know who's not doing it. Roland Martin's not doing
it. Well, he's doing more than any other of these so-called, anchors or whatever you want to call them is doing. You know what I mean? You got to give them that credit because I don't see it on CNN. I mean, just to show how media really is, bro, how do you give someone like Perm Daddy Al Sharpton 2 hours? How does he get the time to do it?
But Roland's not doing it either, and you keep talking about fictional stuff that Roland's not doing. He's not doing it either, so stop saying, but Roland's doing it. No, he's not. He's not doing anything either. He's doing the same thing as the rest of them. He's not talking about these issues. Roland Martin wants a job, and that's all Roland Martin has done. When he was literally buck dancing with Hillary Clinton, that was his platform. He's not talking about black people or black.
Why did he buck dance with Hillary Clinton? Because she's a white mother. You can't name me. Jay, listen.
Roland Martin is out of the same or cut from the same cloth as Al Sharpton. They all operate under Democratic dollars. They are voices for the Democratic Party to give a line to black people that they should follow. They're like Pied Pipers for the Democratic Party.
Rigged that debate. Roland Martin rigged the debate against Bernie Sanders for Hillary Clinton. He flipped her the questions early. Roland Martin is not in black people's interest. Roland Martin is in Roland Martin's interest. He was willing to sell all of us out to hopefully get a job with the Clinton administration. When she lost the election, that Negro was literally in depression. I got the pictures of it on his program. So this fiction that Roland Martin is somehow doing something for black people, that's not just fiction, it's science fiction. Beam me up, Scott.
All I'm going to say is this. Name me somebody that's doing more than he's doing in mass media.
Me.
Name me one person.
Me.
Bro, your platform isn't as big as his.
Jay, hold it a second. Let me say this to you. When Roland Martin got kicked off, got his show disbanded on TV1, it was black entities, because there's a couple of black entities that's streaming. He was streaming at one time. I don't know whether he still is. It's a couple of black entities that contacted him, that I know personally, that contacted him about coming on. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Come on to a black network and do your program. He refused to, and he wanted to, do something, I guess, on his own. You don't have to do that. Listen, nobody's in this for any self-aggrandizement, or they ain't supposed to be. This is a struggle we're in. So if you have a black format that you have started, there's no need for me to reinvent the wheel or go to Blog Talk, a Jewish concern. If I want to get information out to the people, then I'm going to team up with you. I'm not going to start my own that because I don't want to be involved with you. They do that for reasons. This man was contacted by black entities. At the Black Talk Radio Network is a black entity. And it's another one out there, too, that he was contacted. I know he was, and he chose not to. So those guys got their own agenda. You might believe that they're in your corner, and they'll go but so far. But they got their own agenda, man. Don't get fooled by that bull crap.
Ellie, you know me well enough that I'm not fooled.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying.
The point of the matter is that when you have people within media who have a base, who have these sick, crazy Negroes who support them and back them, and you don't really have alternatives, or you do have alternatives, and we haven't figured out how to get this alternative point of view to within the masses of people that follow Negroes like Roland Martin, then that's what we as a people have to work on. You see, because the message that Brother Black has is a great message. But the thing is, how do we approve upon the dissemination of the information of Brother Black is the key to all of it. Because we want everybody to hear him.
Yeah, well, Roland Martin is not going to reach out to him.
Okay, but why don't I tell you then, if you ask the question, then now you've asked it, now I'll explain it to you. As a person who has a bit of experience myself, first of all, let's be very, very clear about Roland Martin since we asked about this here. Roland Martin has been running around ever since he got fired on TV1. screeching about this supposed two decades of media experience that he has. Please remember when he was working at that newspaper in Chicago, they were doing better than they were when he left it. And then when he came to TV One, they were doing better than they were before he left it. Roland Martin has a history of talking big about the media experience. The only thing that his media experience can't show you are any media successes. He can't show you where he's been able to increase an audience. Understand the Negro who is jive talking to you when he's there. If Roland Martin were really valuable, the white networks would have hired him years ago. They did not hire him because he is not an asset. He's a huckster. He's a con man. He's a jive talker who sits up here and gets attention from people. He hustles networks into trying to give him a job so he can go out and act like a big shot and then deceive people into thinking, well, if he's on TV, he must be important. But when you take a look at his numbers, you realize that's not the case. You made an inaccurate statement before that by perception would seem to be true only if you base it on cable television. When you go on Roland Martin's YouTube channel, go take a look at the average video that he puts up. On average, he gets 2,000 to 5,000 views. He doesn't get millions. He doesn't get hundreds of thousands, except for videos that are simulcast to a cable television network. If there's an appearance on CNN, if there was an appearance on TV One, those videos get hundreds of thousands of views. So what does that really tell you? Is that Roland Martin's audience that is watching those few videos that actually get a decent view count? Or is that CNN and TV One's audience that is going looking for that? And if it doesn't have anything to do with TV One or CNN, they're not interested in watching. I would tell you that the 100 videos he's put up that only get 2,000 or 3,000 views, that's Roland Martin's audience. And the ones that have to are clips from CNN and headline news and TV One, that's TV One's audience. And by that metric, I whip his ass coming and going every single time. I can get more people to watch me on an impromptu broadcast that I just get up one night because I'm bored and say, hey, I'll be broadcasting in 15 minutes. I can get more people to watch me then than Roland Martin can get to watch him in 6 months. When he tries the same thing. The internet has proven Roland Martin's media experience. Here we're going on 2 years later, and so far he hasn't moved an inch. Understand when somebody's hustling you. The only thing Roland Martin succeeded at doing was getting a job. Once he lost the job, he had to show he could get an audience on his own. And we have seen exactly the audience Roland Martin can build for himself. None.
Jay, thank you for your call, man.
Tough, brothers.
Please.
Good luck with the film.
And the other reason why we can't get a black media that works in our interest is we have too many black folk making excuses for the Roland Martins, the Don Lemons, the Tom Joyners of this world. Instead of us putting these failures out to pasture, black folk, because we identify with failing, sit up here and start making excuses for the failures. You know, in white society, Asian society, Arab society, you've got to earn the right to win. You've got to earn the right to lead. And the first thing that those young white folk, Asian folk, Arab folk ask you is, how many battles have you won? Show me the battles that Roland Martin has won. Show me the obstacles he's overcome. I can show you the butt he's kissed, and I can show you the battles he's lost. You can't show me any battles that Roland Martin has won. Show me the victories over white supremacy that this guy's got. Show me the progress over white media that he's made. Show me Vice TV running around following him. Show me other media outlets that he doesn't work for that will show him, because you can't show me any of those. We keep propping these people up and giving them a lifetime pass to get attention rather than saying, you know what? You are a broken vessel that does not work. Doesn't matter whether I like you personally or not. You are a broken vessel. You are obsolete. You have failed us. And we're going to replace you with someone who can win. That's why folk love football so much, because white men are very quick to let you know it doesn't matter how much they personally like the coach. Jerry Jones personally liked Jimmy Johnson, but they had a personal disagreement, and out you go. But guess what? He also personally liked Tom Landry. The city of Dallas liked Tom Landry. You got to go too. New Orleans Saints, Jim Mora, the management, Tom Benson, personally liked him. But you can't win, and it's a new day, and the LSU Tigers are doing better than the NFL franchise. Oh, no, can't happen. You got to go. It doesn't matter whether we personally like you. Do you succeed? And if you don't, then this isn't a matter of personal. This is business. And if you look at the business, Roland Martin is a failure. He's failed at every level, and we all know a jive talker when we see one. Let's give him the opportunity to jive talk himself, and let's start backing a quarterback who can actually take us to the big game.
We'd have got you worked up right at the end of the program, Brother Black. But listen, tell a listening audience, when is the next airing of the film, and when will the DVD be released?
This week, we're going to be showing in Norfolk, Virginia and Louisville, Kentucky. You can go to our website, racewarmovie.com. That's racewarmovie.com. Click on tickets, and you can get your tickets for those two events. We're also looking at coming back to New York in the Queens area. So that's going to be a good one for you to be as well. For all the folks in New York who missed it and were hitting up the telephones of the theaters and whatnot, you're going to want to be there for you. As for the DVDs, that's going to come out once the screenings. When the screenings are completely done,
okay,
then we'll come to that. And that's a good one because there's actually going to be a 3-disc edition of the film as well that people are going to want to get their hands on.
Oh, so it'll be some added footage or whatever?
A bunch of added footage. A bunch of the things that did not fit or were not suitable, or I just didn't have the time or ability to put them into the actual theatrical release. A lot of that extra footage that people are asking about is going to be on the 3-disc edition.
Yeah, because I noticed when I watched the trailer, it was a couple of little clips there that I was looking forward to seeing in the movie, and I didn't see it. I was saying, like, well, okay, well, now you just answered it.
Right. You'll probably see a lot more of those. When I put the movie together, I wanted it to have a concise communication. So some of the things you saw in the trailer clips didn't really fit in the movie itself, but most likely you'll see something like that in the 3-disc edition.
Will you be coming back to Philly?
No, because if we keep going round and round, we won't even have the ability to do DVDs, and I would like to try to have them out at least before the holiday season. So I'm really shooting to try to wrap up our screenings so we can get to the DVD part.
Okay.
I've literally been running since 7 a.m., and I would really love to slow down.
Brother Black, listen, thanks for being with us. I've always showcased your work from 7 a.m. to Gentrified now to this. So the door is always open to you to come back. Any new information, any new projects, any new subject matter you want to talk about, the door is always open.
Thank you very much for having me here. And if anything else comes up, be in touch.
And also, it's a young lady that does a program here in Philadelphia that wants you on the program to talk about the Gentrified. So I'll share with you her number, her contact information.
You can do that.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you for having me.
Peace.
Take care now.
Richard, interesting dialogue. We ran a little bit over, but interesting calls right near the end. It's always good to go talk with the listening audience. I hope the brother calls back that made the international call to kind of explore some of the things he was talking about. Hopefully, maybe he'll call next week. Again, two things I want to let everybody know again before we leave: the panel discussion and community forum. You know, it's kind of ironic that Brother Black was talking about we needed agenda for this. Exactly. Time for Awakening is hosting a panel discussion and community forum. 50 years of Black political representation in Philadelphia. Now is the time for an African-American grassroots or African-centered political agenda. The location is Imhotep Institute Charter High School, 6201 North 21st Street in Philadelphia. That's Saturday, October 27th, time 12 noon to 4 p.m. Sponsored by Time for Awakening, the Kaumba Family AILC, and African Centered School Association. The admission to the event is free. For more information, just look on the social media pages of Time for Awakening radio program, or go to timeforawakening.com. It's all over social media. We'll be looking forward to folks in the area to being there. To not only, this is the initial discussions to something that we need. We're planning future forums in reference to this to talk about some plans moving forward. We've had plenty of guests on the program that have independent black parties functioning in their cities. So, again, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to be the one that's that kind of is out front on this. If we got other brothers that's doing positive things, we want to bring them in. We want to pick their brain because we're in this struggle together. It's not big eyes or little U's. It's all of us. So that's the beginning panel discussion we're having here, and hopefully many more moving forward, and some action taken based on the discussions. Monday starts the week out with the African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Time for Awakening. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 6 to 10 Monday evenings. Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 10 on Monday on Time for Awakening. From 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect with Sister Nataki and Brother Talit. And they'll be starting their second season, airing soon. I got to contact Sister Nataki and see when the launch date is starting. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC on 8 to 10 on Wednesday evening on Time for an Awakening. And then Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10 p.m. on Time for an Awakening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
children to save the children.